Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. So if you were listening to last week's show, I had an extensive list of resources and information regarding those that are impacted by the LA County fires. And if you did not tune in last week, I will continue to add to this list. It is on the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Also, if you are here listening locally in Irvine, on Monday I headed over to Northwood Park, and they had a big initiative underway to collect items for the firefighters, and that will continue because the Orange County firefighters are helping Los Angeles. So you can head over to the website for the City of Irvine, cityofirvine.org. And you'll see a link, Irvine Gives, and the City of Los Angeles continuing to aggressively respond to the fires. And there is a great organization called LA Strong Foundation. They're part of this as well. So on the website, you can see a link for Donate Now. There's a charity directory, disaster relief, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a lot of great information. So I'm actually going to put that link up on the show blog as well. Okay, standing by to join me on the first half of the show is Dr. Linda Eckert, author of Enough, Because We Can Stop Cervical Cancer, and she is an internationally recognized expert in immunizations and cervical cancer prevention. She's joining us now. Good morning, Dr. Eckert.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for calling in.
It's a privilege to be here.
You're actually my first guest because typically, well, last week I focused a lot on the LA fire victims. You and I were talking about this.
Yeah, and can I just start by saying that I don't even know what to say, really, but I just offer as much empathy and wishes for resilience and help. And gosh, you know, I was in Seattle and we are just watching the suffering, and I feel like it's hard to almost talk about the resilience and the courage of the women in the book that I wrote, simply because I realize that the level of suffering that's happening there right now.
Mm-hmm. You know, and thank you for saying this. It's horrific to see what has gone on. But also, if people are already struggling financially, mentally, emotionally, and then to add to this is unbelievable. And so thank you so much for sharing that. So I want to dive into your book because cervical cancer kills almost 350,000 women each year, as you pointed out. So talk about why you decided now to release this book. I know there's been a lot of controversy with vaccinations and things like that.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. You know, I'm a 30-plus year gynecologist, and I had my first profound experience with cervical cancer when I was a patient when I was 25, and I was working in Liberia, and it was my first trip over the ocean, my first passport, and it was the first time I saw somebody with this advanced disease. And, you know, there was really no treatment. There was no options for her, including not even any morphine. And
whoa,
the suffering that I saw for her and for her family because of the equity issues and the challenges just seared her in my heart. And as I've gone through my career, I've continued to see way too much suffering that needn't happen, because this is a preventable cancer. We have the science figured out. And so eventually what happened to me was I just had seen and sat in a room with one too many women where I said, you know, you have cervical cancer, and yes, we can treat it, but the treatment causes its own set of challenges that can be lifelong. And it, at the minimum, you know, takes away a person's fertility. And I just thought, what can I do? And I finally was sitting in the World Health Organization at a meeting, looking around at all of these wonderful scientists when we were launching the global elimination effort for cervical cancer, and that was 2018.
Okay.
And I looked around and I thought, where are the voices of the women? The women that have been impacted by this disease or their family members? And maybe if we bring those voices out and surround it with information that's geared for the general public, that doesn't need any kind of medical knowledge to understand about what is HPV, what mm-hmm. is the vaccine, what is screening, why can't we do this better, why, what will it take, and actually offer a hopeful way forward through the incredible stories of these resilient women who survived cervical cancer, well, maybe that could make a difference. And so that was how Enough was born. And it was a five-year process. As you know, writing a book is really hard.
Oh, yes.
But it was a five-year process. And then now I'm really pleased to be able to share the incredible stories of these women and this information, and just hope that it can be another tool for advocacy.
Well, thank you for that, by the way. So let's back up a second for people that don't even know what HPV is, how to get it. You know, could you just give a little explanation of that?
Yeah, I appreciate the chance to talk about that, because HPV, or human papilloma virus, is incredibly common. 80% of adults will have HPV at some point in their lives. It's transmitted sexually, most commonly with penetration, but it also can be transmitted with just digital contact. And so 80% of adults will get it. But the good news is that most of the time, the infection goes away on its own. And there are most of the HPV virus types themselves, there are over 150 types, but most of the types aren't as serious. There are 12 types that, if they hang around, like on the cervix, for a couple years, they can lead to precancer changes and eventually cancer. And so it's those 12 types that are called the high-risk HPV types. Those are the types we test for in HPV testing and cervical cancer screening. And seven of those types are types that the vaccine can prevent, and including type 16 and 18, which are the two most dangerous types that cause together 70% of cervical cancer around the world.
So I could understand how there'd be a lot of confusion and misconception. So I know I'm kind of blown away. There's so many types. And I know, like, for instance, when I was growing up, I had like Plantar's warts, and that's a form of HPV, correct?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. There's so many types of HPV, and about, there's over 150 types. The types are determined by the protein structure on the surface of the virus. Mm-hmm. And so that's how they come up with these types. But the types that can cause cervical cancer or other cancers are only 12. And again, not all of those are created equal. Some of those types are way more dangerous as far as causing precancer changes than other types. Mm.
So, full disclosure, years ago when I was living in Boston, I kept getting exams, and I came back, I had severe dysplasia.
Okay.
I had, so they said I was precancerous.
Right.
Yeah. And it was scary, you know. I ended up having a LEAP procedure, and but I kept thinking, wow, what if I didn't have that medical care? What if I hadn't gone for that exam?
Right. And, well, great for you that you followed up and that you had that access. And one of the things I write about in the book is, you know, that access isn't equally available, certainly globally, mm-hmm. obviously, where every 90 seconds a woman dies of this disease globally, because most of the world doesn't have access to the vaccine or screening or leaks or treatment. Working hard to change that, but currently it's not very accessible. And in the U.S., a woman dies every 2 hours of this cancer. And again, one of the biggest challenges is access. If you don't mm-hmm. have insurance, you can't, you know, getting low-cost HPV tests, low-cost screening. Well, the CDC funds that most commonly in many places. But, you know, if you live really in a rural place, you have to get yourself to a clinic that does low-cost screening. And then if you need a LEAP like you had, I mean, they are 95% effective at preventing cancer. Mm-hmm. But if you have no insurance or funding, you know, they cost, like, I don't know how much yours was, but it's very common to have them be $2,000.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, it's unsettling, but I felt like, you know, thank goodness I was able to do it. So talk about the book, how you, because you have so much great research and studies in here, quantitative data. Tell me how this book evolved. Did you have a clear path when you started this book, or did it kind of evolve over the 5 years?
Well, you know, I've been involved in writing policy for HPV vaccine and cervical cancer locally and globally for many, many years. So when I first started, I thought, oh, how hard can this be? Because I've been writing about HPV my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really hard. And what was really hard was to get the stories of the women. That wasn't as hard as I thought, although I took 2020 off to collect stories of women from around the world. And I was going to use my contacts that I've had with Global Health, but then COVID hit.
Yeah.
So I couldn't travel anywhere to go visit the clinics where I've worked, et cetera. And so I ended up getting most of the stories through soliciting online or survivor networks and doing a lot of the interviews over Zoom. And so by 2020, the end, I had most of my interviews, and including a lot of interviews with experts. But then when I started writing, I realized organizing this in an approachable way is challenging. So I actually hired a book coach who was incredibly helpful.
It's great.
At keeping me on task and organized. And she had no science background. So every time I said something that was, as she said, too jargony, she would just like slash it. And she at one point said, if you don't quit writing like a professor, I'm going to have to kill you.
So, that's comforting.
It was very helpful. But I think actually the book is accessible for people who don't have medical knowledge, and that's my goal, is that anyone can pick up this book and understand, you know, what, how HPV works, how does the vaccine work, how does screening work, and that they'll be motivated also because of the amazing, courageous stories that women were willing to share with me.
I was going to ask about that. Was there some couple stories you want to share that stood out to you?
Well, I think one of them is in the first chapter where I start talking about equity. And, you know, I've looked at Harborview, which is our essentially L.A. County in Seattle, for over 30 years. And so we take care of people regardless of insurance status and take care of many immigrants. But a few years ago, I had a patient come in for prolonged bleeding, and also because she had this smell from her vagina. And she was an add-on patient at the end of the morning. And when I listened to her, she hadn't been able to have cervical cancer screening in about 8 years because she had moved a few times, and the low-cost clinic in Colorado where she was going to go closed because of funding. And she also had been sexually assaulted previously. And so getting a intimate pelvic exam was certainly something that was quite hard for her. So she had all these obstacles to overcome, and the long story short is by the time she came, at 10 years later, she had this really large mass at the top of her vagina, and, you know, I can still close my eyes and see what that is like, and I can still remember telling her that she had cervical cancer. I was thinking she did. I did biopsies and that we would get her help, and just, you know, again, the shock and the awe that she felt of having her worst fear being confirmed when you avoid going to a doctor for a long time, and then you come in and you hear this bad news. And so, you know, her name was Susie, and that was just a very profound moment to me, seeing her.
Sure. Oh. You must feel very changed as a result of writing this book, having traveled all over the world and done all this research.
You know, I appreciate that. I am changed, and I always thought I was an empathetic physician, which I think I probably am, gynecologist. But what I had no idea about, really, was after you tell somebody, like Susie, about their cancer, and they go see the oncologist, and they may get, quote, cured, where they're not going to have cancer, the resilience it takes to live with cancer was something that I learned so much about, and just the strength. And, you know, you get back pain. Is it a recurrence? You have a scan coming up in 3 months. You start feeling, they call it scanxiety about it. And just And also some of the side effects from radiation treatment, which can be extremely long-lasting. So I learned a lot about just how much courage it takes to live with cancer.
I know breast cancer is very common. What are the top, you know, 3-5 cancers for women?
It depends on where you live and if you have cervical cancer screening available.
Okay.
You know, in countries that do not have screening or vaccination, cervical cancer is always 1 or 2. And those are, you know, essentially a lot of Africa, a lot of Southeast Asia, and some in Central America. In the United States, I think cervical cancer is number 5 for women.
Okay.
But I would also say that HPV cancers, the HPV can cause 6 cancers. It can cause throat cancer, anal cancer, vaginal, vulvar, and penile cancer. And actually in men, HPV type 16 causes 70% of throat cancer, and that's one reason why we vaccinate boys as well. And throat cancer is increasing in our country, and 2 years ago was the first time that more men were dying of throat cancer caused by HPV than women were dying of cervical cancer, because there's no pap smear equivalent for the throat. There's no way to screen for it. So it's found when it's at a later stage.
Are other factors contributing to that, though, throat cancer? I mean, I've heard things even like vaping.
Yeah, definitely smoking, alcohol use can be risk factors for it as well. So there are behavior aspects that can be modified. But, you know, if you get the HPV vaccine and you don't get HPV 16, it is the single best thing you can do for preventing throat cancer.
So I know there's been controversy with the vaccination. I've heard, you know, side effects and things like that. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I appreciate the chance to talk about it. I feel like the vaccine has been out in the United States since 2006. Globally, there's been over 270 million doses given. And the safety has been tracked like a hawk, because this is a controversial vaccine. And you give it to people, you know, when the ideal age is 9 to 14. That's because that's ideally before they're exposed to the HPV virus, but also because they have a better immune response then. They build better antibodies. They actually need fewer doses if you get it from 9 to 14. And in this country, you use it up to age 45. So there has been a lot of reports of especially misinformation about side effects. And I would just say, you know, I do believe in data. I think they've been investigated extremely carefully by safety agencies all over the globe. And, you know, this is really one of the safest vaccines we have. It's also one of the most efficacious. Like, if you get the HPV vaccine before you're exposed to the types it prevents, it's 95 to 98% effective. And in countries that have been using it for quite a long time that have had really good uptake, like Scotland, Australia, Sweden, they are near zero now for new cervical cancer cases. And so it's like a superpower vaccine.
Wow. And I have heard controversies. I was also wondering, like, why are they vaccinating at 9?
Yeah. And I think there's a few reasons. Number one is when this vaccine was rolled out in the United States, it got really messed up with, like, behavior. If you gave this vaccine, would girls change their sexual behavior? Would they have sex more often? Would they get partners sooner? And so there was a lot of fear, and in fact, it became like a political and religious football. And the focus on the family came out against it. And so people are saying, why would we give a vaccine at 9 to someone when it prevents a sexually transmitted disease? And one reason is it's really a cancer vaccine. So you're giving it to them at an age when they develop better antibodies, which, you know, people do between 9 and 14. And number two is you kind of just take it out of the question about whether, if you give it at that young age, you know, you're kind of hoping to get it in when it can work the best, which is before people are having sexual activity. And so globally, WHO and everybody has recommended that 9 to 14 is the ideal range for those two reasons.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know why. I always thought that was really young.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like listeners to know about your book, including where to find it?
Well, you can find it from any bookseller, and so thank you for looking for it. And also, feel free to have your library request to carry it, because then it would be accessible to everybody. So I think that's a wonderful option. And I guess what I would like people to know is that this is a preventable cancer, that we can each make a difference, and that the stigma that's associated with HPV and with a cancer that's below the belt cancer is something we can do about just by getting good, accurate information about what the human papillomavirus is and how common it is, and, you know, just using the language and talking about it. I really feel like we can have a big impact. I've seen that happen with breast cancer over my career. Initially, it was stigmatized when I first started, and now the NFL wears pink.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
With advocacy, we can do a lot of good work.
Yes. There's, you know, just like mental health, there shouldn't be stigma in talking about this.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, I will say January is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, and I did put a link on my show blog to that and all the information about you, Dr. Eckhart. And there's wonderful reviews. This must feel so satisfying to get all these wonderful, you know, reviews and comments about your book.
Well, I really appreciate it. And I also just say hats off to the women who had incredible courage to say to me, like, sure, you can share my story and put it in a book, because I really don't want other people to have the same suffering I've had. And that has really been an incredible thing for me as an author and as a human being.
Well, also, as we get older, we think about, especially if you become a mom, like, you want to open up and share your story, because, yes, it's frightening. It's so scary to get that diagnosis, but you want to encourage others, again, to end the stigma, to talk about this.
Yeah, I agree totally.
So I want to just mention that all your information and this conversation will be up on the show blog within an hour after I wrap, and the show blog is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And do you have a website you could share?
Yes, my website is my name, all lowercase, drlindaeckhart.com. And I also am on Instagram at Dr. Linda Eckhart. And so, yeah, I really encourage following and checking out my website, which has a lot more information about cervical cancer, also about the book, where I'm speaking, et cetera.
You know, one last thing I didn't ask is, boys are getting this vaccination, correct? Is that age 9
correct.
As well?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. 9 to 45 for boys and girls they are eligible, but the target age for getting it ideally is 9 to 14.
Yep. Got it. Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in. I really enjoyed this conversation.
I really appreciate the opportunity. And again, our thoughts are with all of you in that region, and we are all looking for ways to plug in and help. So
thank you so much. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
That was Dr. Linda Eckhart talking about her new book, Enough, Because We Can Stop Cervical Cancer. And all the information is up on the show blog right now, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And if you're not familiar with KUCI, you can head on over to our website at kuci.org. We have an eclectic mix of great talent here at KUCI, music shows, public affairs shows, and more. And if you want to find out about being a guest, you can send me an email to Janeane, Janeane, at KUCI.org. Before we go to break, I just want to again reiterate that there is a link on my show blog to information and resources for those impacted by the LA County fires. I have a list of where people can get free food, resources, and other care information. If you've lost a pet, if you know someone that's lost a pet, if you are displaced, you are looking for, you know, anything, food, clothing, toiletries, anything. Even here in Orange County, we have people who are putting together items to be donated to LA. I know the LA Strong Foundation is doing wonderful work, and my friend Julia Bendis is part of that. So if you want to find out more information, you can head on over to the show blog. There are also ways to volunteer up on the show blog. Lots of ways to volunteer. And you can constantly be donating. You can even donate to the Orange County Firefighters. They had a great initiative that will be ongoing, where students and adults are putting together care packages for Orange County firefighters that are helping in Los Angeles. So again, you can head on over to the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Okay, we'll take a little break and then we'll be back. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.